that direction is not just good for the consumer, but it's also good for the environment. And there's no plan B. This is our only earth for the cosmos.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we hear from the candidates for New York State's 109th Assembly District seat. Well, on Thursday, WAMC and the New York League of Conservation Voters co-hosted a candidate forum on environmental issues, with seven candidates who are running to replace New York State Assemblywoman Pat Fahey in the 109th District seat. Fahey is running for the state Senate. Two of the candidates are Albany County legislators, four are on the Albany Common Council, and one is a Republican who's also run for mayor and this seat last election. I moderated the forum, as you'll hear. Primary day is June 25th, and the general election is November 5th.
Good afternoon, and welcome to WAMC's live forum with candidates running for New York's 109th State Assembly District seat. We're broadcasting live from the Linda in Albany, along with our partners at the New York League of Conservation Voters. I'm WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. In a minute, we'll begin questions from WAMC's Lucas Willard and League President Julie Tai. The candidates on stage today are hoping to succeed Assemblywoman Pat Fahey, a Democrat who's now running for the state Senate. We invited all active candidates in the field to participate. They include six Democrats running in the June 25th primary and one Republican. We'll hear from them momentarily. Today's forum will offer the candidates 1 minute apiece to answer each question, along with a shorter lightning round. We have a lot of ground to cover in the next hour, and to keep things fair, each round of questioning will begin with a different candidate. First, each candidate will be allowed to make a 90-second opening statement. We'll begin with Owusu Anane.
First, I just want to thank WMC and also the League of Conservation Voters for having this event today. My name is Owusu Anane. I'm a son of immigrants from West Africa, also a public school educator at Columbia High School. I'm also a city council member representing the Pine Hills neighborhood. I'm running because I believe that it's time that we take care of everyday people. For the past couple of years, we've seen the state of our state going different directions, and we need to make sure that we're fighting for housing affordability, fighting for the working families, fighting to make sure that our schools, particularly our public schools, are being fully funded, making sure that we fight for LGBTQ friends, and also fighting for reproductive rights. These issues are at a critical juncture, and we need to make sure that we have someone who don't mind ruffling feathers if it means doing what is right. This assembly race is going to make sure that we have people who are going to work day and night to represent Albany, Gilderland, and the town of New Scotland. I've demonstrated that as a council member, and I want to continue that fight and energy representing the state assembly on 109th Assembly District.
Thank you, and you saved a little bit of time, so we appreciate that. Next to Ginny Farrell.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to thank the League of Conservation Voters, WAMC, and everyone here at the Linda and listening at home for this forum. I'm Ginny Farrell, and I'm running to represent the people of Albany, Gilderland, and New Scotland in the New York State Assembly. I'm the candidate with the most extensive and diverse experience. I've worked for the Assembly for 12 years. I'm currently the Committee Director for the Environmental Conservation Committee in the office of Assembly Member Deborah Glick, and began my career in the Assembly with our Assembly Member, Pat Fahey. I also have extensive experience in local office. I'm currently in my second term on the Albany Common Council and serve as Majority Leader and represent the 13th Ward. I also was elected to the Albany School Board, where I served in every leadership role, including President, and led the transformational Albany High Project. When I first spoke to the Albany School Board, advocating for our kids in schools, I was a stay-at-home mom and I was so scared. Everything about me shook, my voice shook, I was shaking. But I knew that my voice mattered, and no matter how it sounded, I needed to use it. And I've been using it ever since to advocate and to bring people together to make things happen. I believe in public education, I'm passionate about the environment, I believe in strong neighborhoods and communities, and doing all we can to make every neighborhood better for every single person. I have the knowledge and the know-how to bring people together to get things done, and the experience to get them done from day one. I look forward to the discussion today and to proving that I'm the best candidate for this seat. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Jack Flynn next.
I want to thank everybody for attending this forum. My name is Jack Flynn. I'm the former chair of the Albany County Democratic Committee. I currently work for the New York State Senate in its operations I'm a three-term common council member for the city of Albany. I worked for bill drafting for years, so I have a lot of knowledge and experience dealing with legislation. I was raised by a single mother of five. You know, my father died when I was young of leukemia. I currently raise my two daughters, who are graduates of Albany High. My one daughter just recently graduated from Syracuse, the environmental science and forestry. So through the past 4 years, I've learned a lot about the science, the forestry, and in our environment as a result of my daughter. Some of the things that my daughter's focused on is climate change, environmental racism, and public health. My daughter, again, like I said, has been a big advocate for me. If I win, she will be right on my team as a advocate for any environmental issue that we have. I'd like to thank the forum here for this discussion, and hopefully we can have a nice, friendly discussion on environmental issues.
We go next to Andrew Joyce.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Albany County Legislator Andrew Joyce, and I first want to thank our hosts, WAMC, and the New York Conservation League of Voters for convening us all today for this important candidate forum in the 109th Assembly District. The 109th Assembly District in the city of Albany has been my home my entire life. This is where I decided to raise my family, and I am firmly committed to our shared future in this district, serving and protecting our community during what seems like an ever-evolving climate crisis. Serving and protecting are not just words for me. I've been in the U.S. Army Reserves and the New York Army National Guard for the past 23 years. I've risen from the rank of private to major and served in Iraq and Afghanistan and here at home during the COVID-19 pandemic, and yes, those 100-year storms like Superstorm Sandy and Tropical Storm Irene that seem to happen every 3 to 5 years. I continue my service here at home as an Albany County legislator for the past 8 years, 6 of those years as chairman and a proven leader on environmental issues. And one of my most fondest memories as chair was standing shoulder to shoulder with our members and the New York Conservation League of Voters just last year to establish programming to educate Albany County residents on the benefits of Inflation Reduction Act. So it's great to be with you all again. Thank you.
We go next to Alicia Purdy.
Hi, thanks for having me here today. I'm so excited to talk to friends and neighbors about this important issue, environmental stewardship. I ran for mayor of Albany in 2021. My background is in journalism, so my career has been as a watchdog of government, tracking federal legislation. I used to work in the Assembly Press Corps. I've got a lot of experience in financial investing as well as the managing editor of 2 global news companies covering a range of issues at the federal level. My 3 primary passions in this race, well, my first one is people. Without people, what is the point? So my 3 primary passions for this campaign are our peace, our prosperity, and our potential. And environmental stewardship has a huge part to play in all of that. I'm the only candidate running who does not currently hold a political office. That's significant because I don't have any political promises to keep, and I can truly represent the voice of the people. So having somebody who understands what it's like to watch over corruption in government is important when you're looking for a common sense candidate who can speak for common sense New Yorkers. So peace and prosperity and our potential as New Yorkers is what you're going to see in the conversation that I have today. And I'm excited to be able to share that with you. I'm running as a Republican and as a conservative so that all kinds of New Yorkers that live in the 109th Assembly District can have a place that they can feel comfortable voting.
Thank you. We go to Dustin Reedy next.
Good afternoon. My name is Dustin Reedy. I'm an Albany County legislator, Congressman Paul Tonko's campaign manager, and a proud progressive and pro-environment Democrat running for the 109th Assembly District. I want to thank the League of Conservation Voters and WAMC for hosting this forum and giving us the opportunity to speak with you all here at the Linda and listening at home on your radios about the environmental challenges we face. Climate change and protecting our environment, it means so much to all of us here, whether it's protecting our clean drinking water, ensuring we have clean air to breathe, reducing our carbon footprint while building our green economy, protecting our green spaces and parks to make sure that all of us here and for generations to come can enjoy the beautiful district and state that we live in. The environment is of paramount importance, and all this impacts our health and well-being. If you're like me and you have seasonal spring allergies, you know because of climate change, they come 20 days earlier and last longer every year. And the environmental challenges we face are many. This district needs a strong Democratic voice that can speak to the issues, build coalitions, and create the change that we need. I have a proven track record as a county legislator and Congressman Tonko's campaign manager of delivering for this district on the environment, and I'll do that in the New York State Assembly. Thank you, and I look forward to answering your questions and having this discussion this afternoon.
Thank you, and the last opening statement comes from Gabriella Romero.
Thank you so much for having me at this forum. Hi, everyone on the radio, and hi to everyone sitting in the audience tonight. My name is Gabriella Romero, and I'm running to be your next New York State Assembly member in the 109th District. As an Albany Common Council member, I've made sustainability in my district and across the city a priority, and I was really proud to support a city budget proposal to electrify Albany's vehicles, which would reduce carbon emissions and promote a cleaner transportation. My commitment to environmental stewardship goes beyond policy, though. I love to organize regular community cleanups, and I have an annual Earth Day event providing composting boxes and recycling bins to constituents. And what people don't know is that the city provides those things at no cost, but this annual event kind of bridges that gap between the existing programming structure that the city has and those that actually need it. I'm also a public defender in my day job, which makes me really acutely aware of systemic racism and the cyclic nature of government disinvestment when it does happen. I'm keenly aware of environmental racism and the disproportionately negative effects of fossil fuels and negative gas exhausts that we've experienced in our Black and brown neighborhoods. These efforts and priorities really reflect my dedication to a pro-environment agenda with an environmental justice lens, and I'm really excited to be here to talk about these issues, but also to learn, because the environmental issues are so important as we face a climate crisis and a really dire one, but sometimes things kind of get lost in the weeds. It's a lot of science, and I've really learned a lot.
And that's time. Thank you.
Preparing for this forum, I'm looking forward to talking more.
Thank you. No one heard the bell during those opening statements, but for the questioning round, I just want all the candidates to know you'll be limited to 60 seconds. Our first question comes from Julie Tai.
Well, thank you to our candidates for those opening remarks, and good afternoon. My name is Julie Tai. I'm president of the New York League of Conservation Voters and the New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund. We are a statewide organization whose mission is to educate, engage, and empower New Yorkers to be effective advocates for the environment. So thank you to WAMC and our host, Ian Pickus, and my co-moderator here, Lucas Willard. Thank you to all of us for joining us today, both here in studio and listening on the radio. As we all know, the urgency of the climate crisis has never been greater. We've already seen the devastating impacts in our communities, from more frequent and intense storms causing devastating flooding, to rising sea levels, to raging forest fires that made our skies orange, to heat waves. That's why this election is so critical, and that's why we're here today, to ensure that the environment and climate change are front and center on the campaign trail, and that voters know where the candidate stands on the issues. Because the most important thing we can do as individuals to protect the environment and fight climate change is to vote. So thank you all for participating today, and let's get started.
The first question will begin with Gabriella Romero.
Current regulations make it difficult for utilities to slow down the build-out of new costly gas infrastructure across the state. How would you address this concern in a way that enables utilities to transition off gas and comply with the climate law's goals while protecting utility rates for consumers?
Yeah, well, I think you're kind of referencing the New York Heat Act, which is sponsored by Assemblymember Fahey. What an amazing bill that was really supposed to pass in the budget. I'm in full support of the New York Heat Act, and I'm really proud of Assemblymember Fahey for championing that bill. The New York Heat Act is crucial to transition our buildings from fossil fuels to renewable energy. And in the 109th District, I look forward to advocating for incentives and funding to assist homeowners and business owners in making that transition. So this has to include three things. Obviously, energy-efficient appliances, but incentivize the ability to use heating and cooling systems like heat pumps, and supporting the weatherization of buildings, whether that's through more education or incentives or programming to provide the materials that are needed for these buildings. So by reducing the dependence that we have on fossil fuels, I'm confident that we'll be able to meet these goals.
That's time, and we go to Dustin Reedy. Same question.
Well, on this issue, I support the New York Heat Act, and I know Assemblymember Fahey is working hard to get this passed this legislative session. I hope it does get passed. The HEAT Act is crucial to helping both our transition to renewable energy and also saving money for our residents by lowering their energy bills. I'm sure everyone here saw the headlines of National Grid wanting to raise rates again on everyone. And this legislation is crucial, especially for folks or seniors who have fixed incomes, on lowering those energy costs. If it doesn't pass this year, you have my word that'll be one of my top priorities next year. and I will bring labor, activists, and elected officials together to the table to reach the best solution for both workers and consumers. I have 7 labor union endorsements in this primary, and I've built strong relationships with elected officials in every level of government, from the local, state, to the federal side. And I'll leverage all those relationships to help pass the HEAT Act if I'm in the Assembly next year. Thank you.
That's time, and we go to Alicia Purdy next.
Okay, so speaking, if it is the HEAT Act we're speaking of, I just want to give you a broader picture. As the candidate who's running for a Voice of Common Sense People, we've had a 39% increase in our budget regarding our taxes and the way that we address our ability to pay for the heat in our homes and all the other things. And I love looking at the legislation to pick it apart. That's what I do as a journalist, to look at where the holes are. That's really important that we have a diversity of thought when we approach these issues. So yes, greener buildings, absolutely. Efficient appliances, yes. Clean energy, all those things are great. How are we putting food on the table? And so my biggest priority is to make sure that as we proceed with environmental stewardship, and we should, it is a priority how we take care of our natural resources. What does that look like for people who have food to put on the table, they have a business to run, they have a family to raise? And I believe firmly in my own life, this is the way I live it, is that conservation starts at home, and the way that we address our environmental needs begins with education, and it extends beyond there. So when we look at...
time. Go ahead. Thank you very much. Okay, Andrew Joyce, same question, please.
Thank you. I'm, in addition to basically almost all of us up here, a strong supporter of the HEAT Act. I share the frustration of many in the community and the state legislature for the inability to get across the finish line, you know, as of right now. We need to act now and act boldly on the climate crisis that we're experiencing. And one of the things that I learned as chair of the legislature when we tackled tough environmental issues, you know, behind the scenes and, you know, in caucus and working to work through the, you know, the different environmental laws and all the different loopholes that you had to jump through in order to enact tough legislation. A lot of it is bringing in, you know, different vendors, bringing in, you know, the private sector, bringing in the members to get a full understanding of what the bill and what the issue is, to make sure that we all understand going forward. And I think the HEAT Act was initially at least a victim, you know, to misinformation and, you know, some politicking, you know, particularly from Western New York. So I think what we need to do is, you know, kind of slow down and, you know, fully address the issue, you know, truthfully and forcefully. Again, the frustration we felt from our members of the state legislature was clear.
Yeah. Okay, next to Jack Flynn, same question.
Thank you. I think we all agree on the New York HEAT Act. Mm-hmm. I think Pat Fay has done a great job with the legislation. Like Andrew said, we got to get it over the top. We have a lot of seniors, low-income folks that really need to have a basic bill, and it can't keep going up. We got to keep our energy low. We have to keep the cost low so that our seniors can afford to live, our middle-class families can afford to raise their kids. So we really got to focus on the cost of the New York HEAT Act so that our everyday person can succeed in life.
Okay, we go next to Ginny Farrell. Same question. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate Assemblymember Fahey's leadership in the environment and many issues, including the New York HEAT Act. And I am also hopeful that it's not something we have to continue to discuss, but there's more that can be done and should be done. So we also really need to look at our bidding requirements. We've lost several renewable projects, wind and on land, because the projects themselves have fallen through. So allowing the different agencies to actually look at our Climate Leadership and Community Protection, or ACT, or CLCPA goals as part of those bidding projects, so you can really see the viable projects so they can move forward, would absolutely be something I think is important. I also think we really have to look at our infrastructure. If we want to build out the electrical grid, we actually have to make sure that there's the infrastructure for it, whether we're talking about electric buildings or electric vehicles. And we have to do it in a way that's common sense and really thinks about the communities that are involved.
That's time. Thank you very, very much. Owusu and Nane to finish this round.
Yeah, thank you. And as it relates to the HEAT Act, I believe I'm the only one that I've actually stood side by side with a lot of the HEAT advocates, particularly at the state capitol, and also events that they have had in the past. When it comes to the New York HEAT Act, New York should be leading. We are the greatest state, and I think that we should be leading on these environmental issues, but also looking at it from an equity lens and protecting all of our communities, particularly when we have natural gas. Most communities that are impacted are marginalized communities. We have the Sheridan Hollow that have been impacted by natural gas and coal. Even when you think about the Capital Renewable Act that is being pushed right now, fully in support, because we need to make sure that all of our buildings are passing legislation that protect our environment and reduce our carbon footprint. I could tell you this, as relates to the HEAT Act, when it comes to, it did pass the Senate, we're waiting for the Assembly to act, and I'll tell you this, as the next Assembly member, I will pass this with my colleagues advocating, we will pass the HEAT Act.
And when that's
the,
time.
The public is, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. We're moving along here, and if you're just joining us, it's live coverage of the Candidates Forum, WAMC, and the New York League of Conservation Voters in the 109th New York State Assembly District. Lucas Willard has our next question.
The Lead Pipe Right to Know Act requires municipalities to inventory lead service lines by October 2024 and requires the State Department of Health to make the information available through an interactive map. What would you do to ensure communities can access available clean water funding?
This round starts with Dustin Reedy's response.
Well, look, we need to adopt a statewide timeline to remove all lead service lines to ensure everyone here in New York State has access to clean drinking water. I think the Lead Pipes Right to Know Act passed last year was a huge victory. We need to pass the Find Lead Pipes Faster Act this year. So we can be more proactive in identifying those lead pipes so we can remove them. I'll do everything I can in the Assembly to make funding available to make that happen. And along the way, if we can also replace, here in the district, we have pipes that are over 100 years old, and we even have wooden pipes under the ground here. If we can upgrade those as well in our infrastructure, I think we should do that. Look, we need to do everything we can to ensure everyone has access to clean drinking water. I support as well expanding the Safe School Drinking Water Act and also regularly convening the Drinking Water Council to help address that issue. Thank you.
Same question to Alicia Purdy next. Thank you.
I live in a house in the city of Albany that's over 100 years old, and if there were lead pipes in my house, I would absolutely want to know about it. So, of course, information is key. When I ran for mayor of Albany, one of the biggest things that I was dismayed about was the lack of transparency and the lack of access people had to information about things that impacted them, like lead pipes. And so there would need to be a greater initiative to make sure that people are aware that interactive maps, so many people, no offense to anyone of any age, but there are a lot of people that struggle to access things, say online or with a QR code or whatever, that one of my passions as someone in charge of any people is to always make sure that we don't wait for people to come to us. We bring that information to them, yes, and fund and make sure that our water is safe, drinkable, and that it's as non-toxic as can be. That's an ongoing project that in a city of this age, the work is never going to be done. And we have to make sure that you have somebody in charge at the legislative level that can make sure there's guardrails for that as well, that people are proactively informed and then action is taken and there's accountability and follow-up to make sure it's done.
That's time. We go to Andrew Joyce now, same question.
Yeah, I think in government, and one of the things that I experience in local government is there's a knee-jerk reaction to when you uncover an issue like lead pipes and dirty drinking water is to either hide or not engage the public on the issue. One of the things that I've learned as chair of the legislature and on tough issues in the community is that you do need to engage the local populace, engage the residents, and get their input on the best way forward on these difficult issues. For clean drinking water, every person in the 109th district and every person has a right to clean drinking water. And having served overseas and been in places where you see people drinking from all manner of ungodly manner, it makes me proud in a sense that we have that capability here in the United States. But also, when we uncover that issue, you need to engage the public and make sure that they're fully involved in the discussion going forward. And infrastructure is a tough issue, and it's a tough issue to get people involved in, but keeping them involved and keeping them engaged is very important.
Thank you. Let's go to Jack Flynn, same question.
What we need to do is start a database. As you all know, we have the General Service goes down there, National Grid, the Water Department. These are all agencies that are down there seeing all these lead pipes. We need to start a database where we can identify all the, you say 100 years, I think there's 200 or 300 years that we have lead pipes in the city of Albany. We really got to identify everyone. It's got to be on a database. We got to get the funds to get them all out of the city of Albany, Gilliland, or New Scotland, or anywhere in New York State. Thank you.
Ginny Farrell, to you.
Thank you. Clean water, it's not just an important environmental issue, but it's also a public health issue. And now that people have the right to know where those lead pipes are, we actually have to ensure that they can actually replace the pipes. One of the big issues is it costs thousands of dollars. And even people who are middle class and higher middle class don't necessarily have the funds to replace them. So it's really important that funding piece is essential to make sure that that infrastructure is there. So within the budget, there's normal advocacy for the Clean Water Infrastructure Act, CWIA. It's currently at $500 million. I think it should be at $600 million. And I also think it's incredibly important to line item that budget out, which I know is slightly in the weeds, but that allows advocates and legislators to keep track of where the funds are so that there's accountability. We know the projects are happening. And that simple thing of lining that out could really push more funding towards lead pipes, and it would allow the advocates to really track it and make sure that the funding is getting to where it needs to be, which is directly to those people replacing those pipes.
Thank you. And Owusu Anane has the last crack at this one.
Yes, thank you. And as relates to, you know, as relates to lead pipe, in the year of our Lord, 2024, to see that we still have lead pipe issues is unconscionable. Lead pipe, when we talk about clean water, we have to make sure that we're educating the public. One of the things I plan on doing when elected is that I want to have some town halls, talk about some of the issues that's going on in the district, but also informing people about what's going on, particularly when it comes to clean water. Again, transparency, having that database that individuals in our community could go to and just look at where some of these lead pipes are located. But most importantly, we have to make sure that we are passionately advocating for funding to address lead pipe. When it comes to lead pipe, most of the communities that are neglected are marginalized communities, communities that has been neglected for decades and disinvestments. So we need to make sure that when we look at lead pipe, we look at it from an equity lens policy, making sure that we're fully funded. Again, we have to make sure that we is readily available so everyone know, and working with my colleagues, even if it's across the aisle, to make sure that this is a priority, because water is important.
That's time, and the reason we have three people up here is because I forgot Gabrielle Romero's answer on this round, so to you.
Thank you, there's a lot of us, so I know it's a lot. I echo my colleagues in that ensuring continued funding for clean water infrastructure is essential for the health and the well-being of the residents in Albany, Gildan, and New Scotland. And I will continue to advocate for state, but most importantly, federal funding to modernize our water systems and address the emerging contaminants, whether it's lead or otherwise. It was mentioned, but it bears repeating, that lead pipes and the replacement of lead pipes are really, really expensive. And right now, programming covers a portion of the cost, but not the cost fully. And so it does impact our most vulnerable Black and brown communities who might not have the funds or the means to actually replace the lead pipes. When we're talking about funding and investments, it's important that we prioritize those districts that need it the most. While we're talking about lead pipes, we also need to improve our water treatment facilities and just in general protect the quality of our water in the most general way possible.
Thank you. And now Julie has question three.
The transportation sector accounts for nearly one-third of total statewide greenhouse gas emissions. Canada, as well as California, Oregon, Washington, and New Mexico, have implemented a clean fuel standard to address this. How would you propose we reduce emissions from our transportation sector?
And this round will begin with Alicia Purdy.
Okay, so right now we have about 50,000 school buses that are running in New York State, and we've all seen that there are some buses out in like Bethlehem Del Mar that have been towed away by gas-powered vehicles, so we're looking for a balance there of what is working and what makes sense, and I am all for creating an electric fleet where that makes sense in a city, in the more rural areas, wherever it makes sense financially. We just looked at lead pipes, and we have a tiered structure system of what makes sense first. Is clean drinking water above an electric vehicle? That's something we're going to have to duke out on the legislative level and in a community of people. But it's important to note that electric vehicles are three times the cost of gas vehicles. And that is okay. That investment is a worthy investment. But it's important that we look at the tiers. I am all about making sure that we are reducing our emissions and bringing them clean, making them electrified however we can. But people have to be first. And that tier of humanity and our human experience and the way that we have things that we need first, it comes first in my mind. And everything else, we can strike the balance
there. Thank
you.
Let's go to Andrew Joyce next on this question.
I'll start off, referring to my experience in the Albany County Legislature as chair. We have a great partner in Carnbrazil with CDTA here in Albany, is always ready to lend an ear and listen about new innovative programming. The issue of fare free transit in the budget this year, we set aside money for transit for newcomers in Albany County and Albany to get back and forth to school and the jobs. So we have a great partner in CDTA to address this issue, but looking across the 109th District and looking across the state of New York and challenging on the issue is the grid. and ensuring that our grid is shored up and can sustain, you know, electric bus fleets for schools. As was mentioned previously, you know, we have tried it in different districts, and it's been kind of a not a hit and miss, but it's been kind of a test phase. But in order to see out, you know, a lot of these issues and a lot of these initiatives, we have to make sure that our grid can sustain it.
Thank you. Next to Jack Flynn, please.
We really need to require our public transportation to have zero emissions by 2029. I know it's common sense. We need to have more charging stations for our public transportation. We really need to put the funding into that for our kids, for our seniors. You know, electric vehicles is the way of the future, and I think we really need to fund it more. Thank you.
Okay, Jenny Farrell next, please.
It is incredibly important to build out the infrastructure. That way, it's easier to allow consumers to make those choices. So wherever we can do that, the whole presence behind saying, if we allow these important environmental choices to be made, people will make those choices. They'll go in that direction. But if the grid is not built out, it won't happen. The Clean Fuel Standard is a creative way to utilize incentives to build out electric vehicle infrastructure. And it's something that, because it is in other states, we can look at other states, learn from them, and choose how best to move forward with it in New York. But ideally, what we want to do is build out that infrastructure and put in incentives in place so that consumers can make those choices. Because right now, it's hard to make those choices. You talk to people who are thinking about electric vehicles, and they're concerned about how far they can get. A lot of them can actually get a lot farther than they realize, but those fears and the concerns are there, and it's important to put the incentives in place.
Thank you. Thank you. That's time. Owusu Anane next.
Yeah, as it relates to transportation, I think when it comes to government, we cannot solve everyone's problem, but I believe that government can help and help themselves, but we also got to take leadership. We have done that on the Common Council, particularly working with the mayor to make sure that we expand, I believe, $5 million that we expanded into EV stations and also EV stations, and also some of our fire department vehicles are also renewable energy, using renewable energy, electric vehicles. We also have the water department working to make sure that they also have electric vehicle. So again, I think that government could take the role to make sure that all vehicles that, and also all vehicles and also in school districts have EV stations and also electric vehicles. But as relates to affordability, we have to make it a priority. We cannot kick down the can down the road. We have to incentivize in the consumers who want to take that route, because that direction is not just good for the consumer, but it's also good for the environment. And there's no plan B. This is our only earth on the cosmos.
Thank you. I'm certain that Gabriella Romero goes next.
Thank you. Could you repeat the question, actually, if you don't mind?
Yes.
The bottom line question is, what would you do, how would you propose we reduce emissions from our transportation sector?
Okay, yeah. So when you're looking at that, I think you answered this question with talking about electric EV vehicles and EV chargers, in addition to making our public transportation electric as well. If we had more time, I'd talk to you about the lack of EV chargers and the time that I had to drive back from New York City with an EV car I didn't know was EV, and the lack of EV chargers from New York City to Albany. But I look forward to increasing the number of EV chargers on mass routes or in strategic locations such as public parking lots, shopping centers, major travel routes. We also need to lift the cap on manufacturers that actually create the electric vehicles and the electric vehicle dealerships in general. By making electric vehicles more accessible and by making electric vehicle driving more accessible in general, we can encourage folks to actually move in this direction and meet our goals as it relates to fossil fuels. And so really quick on public transit electrification, the city of Albany actually is moving.
And that's, unfortunately, that's time for this question.
Right.
And we will go to Dustin Reedy to end this round.
Well, I support adopting a clean fuel standard, which would get us to all zero emission cars by 2050. I also support electrifying our school buses and having those all electrified by 2035. On the consumer side, we need to accelerate our EV charging infrastructure, continue to look at tax incentives so consumers can buy electric vehicles, and lift the cap on EV dealerships. You know, on the school bus side, I was very happy to see all of our local school budgets passed here in the 109th District. Districts buying electric school buses, but buying the buses isn't the only thing you need to do. As my colleague said here, we need to build out the EV infrastructure, make sure the grid can handle the additional electricity usage. And to get that done, you know, we have the blueprint to do this. I'll bring unions, elected officials, and activists to the table, along with residents here, to get this done in the assembly.
And thank you very much. We are going to start round four questioning with Lucas Willard.
Interstate 787 brings thousands of commuters each day into the city of Albany, but has been criticized for separating New York's capital city from its waterfront. As the State Department of Transportation reimagines the future of the roadway, what is your vision to accommodate commuters while also helping Albany reclaim its access to the Hudson River?
The topic of 787 to Andrew Joyce to begin this round.
I attended the most recent presentation by DOT at the Albany Capital Center, and I was overwhelmed and amazed by the work that DOT had done on presenting all the different options going ahead for 787. I'm just looking at the budget. I'm looking at what the potentials are going forward, for what 787 could be going in the future. And a lot of the issues that we're discussing now is about undoing the wrongs of the past as it relates to our transportation infrastructure and emissions, and making sure that we're investing on solutions to fix what we wronged in the past. But there's a wonderful idea being pitched forward right now by a group of innovators in Albany led by BJ Costello towards a canal in downtown Albany. If I had $500 billion, if I had $1 trillion, we'd have a canal going down Broadway in Albany. We'd have a cap over portions of 787 for a big park, and we'd also boulevard it and recapture the economic potential for downtown Albany and connect our city back to the riverfront.
Thank you. And we will continue this question with Jack Flynn.
Thank you. I also attended that. I think everybody attended that seminar. And one thing is we need community input. We really need the community to get involved. Like Andrew said, they weren't part of the first discussion years ago in the 60s, but hopefully they can be a part of this discussion. There had to be over hundreds of people attended it. A boulevard, I think, would be good start. And I do agree with the canalway. And my first time I went to Providence, Rhode Island, I was amazed that they put a canalway in the city with all the funds. So a boulevard and a canalway is something that I would see in the future if we had the funds.
Ginny Farrell's next. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is something that I'm very passionate about and I've been involved with for many years as part of the Albany Riverfront Collaborative and also being very aware of the Albany Waterway Canal Project. From my perspective, when it comes to infrastructure projects, and I think this is an essential project, I appreciate Assemblymember Fahey being so passionate about it and having worked in her office, it was something that I was very aware of. There's incredible options. When I have infrastructure projects, I like to have the people impacted most to really have input on it. So I will say that I have my own favorites, but my favorites will ultimately be the people in the South End who are impacted by those elevated roadways, and the people that work downtown, the businesses, those pieces. So my goals would be to bring the city back together, to bring the waterfront into a more vibrant space. I mean, let's face it, we all want to be able to have dinner on the water.
Time. Thank you very much. Owusu Anane is next on 787, please.
Yeah, the story of 787 is one of racial and environmental injustice. Today, 787 is a major highway in the region, so we are going to make Albany's riverfront fully accessible to everyone and create and capitalize on Albany's best asset, which is its waterfront. Ultimately, we need major state investment to reopen Albany's waterfront. Whether we bury 787 or use some other means to reroute traffic, the project will be a major, major public work endeavor. But we need to be intentional, and we need our federal and state partners to work together to make sure that everyone have access to the waterfront. But also, these are job opportunities that are going to be created, particularly for a community that have been neglected of this investment. Unemployment as high as 22% in the South End. We need to make this happen. And when elected, I'm going to work with the stakeholders, private sector, federal, and the county, whoever wants to work together to make sure that we get our waterfront back.
Next to Gabriella Romero.
When we're talking about 787, we really need to juxtapose what it would cost to replace the highway versus what it would cost to be more creative and take down parts of it. And I I don't even have my own mind made up about what I think should happen in this neighborhood. I've really been slowly and thoughtfully digesting the different presentations and the different input from community members. But when we look at this section of the city of Albany, it's just so important that we prevent or try to mitigate any gentrification, and that we make sure that we're really extremely, extremely thoughtful about taking in the needs and the desires of the community that actually lives there, to not only prevent displacement, but to make sure that the investment is thoughtful and giving back to the community.
We continue with Dustin Reedy on this question. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate all the work. It's a real testament to what a great assembly member, Pat Fahey's done to bring us so close and have reimagining 787 just on the horizon here. Give her, for in her own words, kudos for bringing us this far. I couldn't agree more with my colleagues that the residents should be the one in the driver's seat deciding what we replace 787 with. But it's a great opportunity we have. We could expand our taxable properties in the city of Albany, which would be a huge benefit. And I think whatever we do decide to do, we can work to ensure that we include mixed income housing, that we have mixed use zoning that's involved, and any development we do bring in, replace 787 with, we can make it pedestrian and bike friendly, and we can make sure that whatever we build to replace 787 with isn't as environmentally friendly and carbon neutral as possible. So it's a great opportunity.
Thank you. Last word on 787 goes to Alicia Purdy.
Okay. So I'm an avid kayaker. I went to college in Pittsburgh, which is surrounded by three rivers, and river access is a big deal to me. But my primary concern, as I said all along, is people. Human beings live down there. The city of Albany can't get a grip on the central warehouse. What makes me think they're going to get a grip on 787? I reviewed all the plans, and just like everybody else up here, I'm still digesting ideas, and I do agree that the number one piece of input we need is from people as elected representatives. Our whole job is to hear the advocacy that you bring to the table there. It's an ongoing discussion. I would love to see a walkway over the Hudson like they have way down. I would love to see more access to the riverfront, but taking it down is not as easy as pulling bricks apart. There are people that breathe down there, and we talk about environmental injustices. These are big conversations. We have to have them, but how we have them and what they end up with, I think we're all open here in this area to hearing what impacts people and the lives of people.
Thank you very much. We go to Julie Tai for question number 5.
As New York transitions to a clean energy economy, what will you do to advance environmental justice in the district and across the state and ensure that marginalized communities are not disproportionately burdened by environmental hazards and have equitable access to clean air, clean water, and green spaces?
Round 5 will begin with Jack Flynn's response.
Thank you. Environmental justice is a big concern to all of us at the forum here. Clean air, carbon emissions, decarbonize our buildings. We need to, our water in the city of Albany, as you all know, we just passed fluoride in the city of Albany. You know, hopefully that can improve the health as a social justice issue with the in an equity perspective. The electric vehicles, we really need those going forward to keep our air quality up to par. Thank you.
Okay, we continue with Ginny Farrell now.
Environmental justice is incredibly important, and it's something that we really have to take to heart and be really vigilant on reversing. So one of the ways is to make sure that the New York State buildings themselves are clean energy and renewable energy. We have environmental justice communities right here in our region because of New York State buildings, the Capitol. Beyond that, our SUNY buildings, it's very important to shift all of these buildings to more environmental buildings. We also need to make sure that we're taking care of the environmental justice communities in a lot of other ways. So limiting toxins that are in products is a huge thing. The less expensive the product is, the more likely it is to have toxic chemicals in these products, and it hurts people who can't afford something that is fully organic and has all of the different pieces to it. So there's a lot of places that it's very important to be vigilant on.
That's time on this one, and let's go to Owusu Anane next.
Oh, you just repeat the question?
Yes, a brief repeat.
In short, what will you do to advance environmental justice in the district and across the state to ensure more marginalized communities are not disproportionately burdened by hazards?
Yeah, thank you, and that's a great question. When you think about the environmental justice and racial justice, we see firsthand right here in the city of Albany, particularly when you look at the Port of Albany, where you have crude oils passing through many of our marginalized communities. Many of these kids, and particularly families, have been living over there for generations, breathing toxins. I think that when it comes to government, we have to show leadership, and we need to be bold. We cannot put a Band-Aid on a wound that needs surgery. And what we need is we need funding at the state level to make sure that we are supporting these communities that have been neglected for the past couple of years. So, like, when you think about the Renewable Capital Act, I think it's so important that some of that funding goes to those communities and help those communities to live a better life. Another thing that we need to really start pushing is the, making sure that the Port of Albany and the Chevron Hollow, those communities that have been neglected, we look at policies from an equity lens and working with my colleagues on the assembly to fully fund, particularly the Black, Hispanic, and Legislative Caucus, and let them know
Thank
and take
you.
Them a tour
Thank
of
you.
Albany.
Let's go on to Gabriella Romero, same question.
Yeah, well, Albany has unfortunately impacted communities, our Black and Brown communities already, specifically the Sheridan Hollow and South End communities. And these neighborhoods have borne the brunt of negative environmental impacts for decades. And so it's really, really important as we go forward to prevent measures like that, but also give reparation back to these communities that have been disproportionately affected. One way to do that is something that we're kind of already doing through our MAP program in Albany, giving back and creating workforce development and intense employment opportunities to our Black and Brown communities through good-paying union jobs. Another way is through the intense and amazing advocacy of the Sheridan Hollow Alliance, trying to remove this Sheridan Ave steam plant reliance and move our capital development and our capital, the capital, into renewable energy. We are still...
Thank you. That's time. Thank you very much. Let's go to Dustin Reedy next.
Well, I think everything we work on in terms of the environment has to pass through the environmental justice lens. We all know socioeconomically disadvantaged communities have suffered the most from climate change and climate catastrophes. At the same time, our biggest polluters are not held accountable for the damage they've caused. All they do is reap more profits every year. I support the Climate Change Superfund Act, which would require fossil fuel companies to contribute $1 billion a year to New York State to fund infrastructure improvements to adapt to climate change. It would include at least $400 million to those disadvantaged communities. That's $400 million a year in restorative climate justice. I'll work to pass that and make sure those communities are in the driver's seat on implementing that funding. I also support the Renewable Capital Act here in the 109th District. We go a long way to helping our Sheridan Hollow community out. But again, when it comes to working on the environment, everything we do has to pass through that climate justice lens. And if I'm elected to the assembly, I'll do that.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Alicia Purdy to wrap up this round.
Okay. So, of course, marginalized communities are...
Andrew Joyce will be after you. My mistake. Continue.
Okay. All right. Marginalized communities, of course, suffer. They live in terrible places down by the river right now in the city of Albany. And when I ran for mayor, I can tell you there's a lot of rhetoric about repairing it, but it never got done. So it's important when we talk about environmental justice and looking through these special lenses that we actually take action on our rhetoric. Let's look at the Dunn landfill. It actually was Paul Tonko. He could have been responsible for helping close that down. He did not. We're looking at asthma, migraines, dust particles, asbestos. That's what we're looking at. And we have a broad district here. Love green spaces like Thatcher Park. I remember growing up, people busing there. We need access to green spaces. First of all, we need to fund for things like that. We need to provide green spaces. That's great. But let's work on getting rid of also the toxins that we currently live among, like not toxifying our water, cleaning up our waterways like the Hudson, making sure people have access to that. There are things we can do right now without all this esoteric rhetoric about what we would do. Let's just do what's right in front of us.
Thank you. Andrew Joyce next.
Right. And you know, instead of talking about what I'm going to do, I'll talk about my experience as chair of the legislature and things that we have already done. One of the most exciting or inspiring aspects of undoing a lot of environmental injustice and looking at restorative justice aspects of my work in the county legislature was working so closely with the unions to establish a MAP program in downtown Albany and put Black and Brown communities in the driver's seat as it relates to green jobs And you know, being part of that workforce is going to undo a lot of the environmental injustice that has been done, you know, in the 109th District and across the state. If you look at the district and the city of Albany in particular, you know, the Answers plant, 787, Central Warehouse, you know, the bomb trains or the crude oil trains that are moving through the South End, it's a racist roadmap. And to put that generation of folks and young folks in the driver's seat to train them, you know, towards those jobs in the Port of Albany and elsewhere to undo all the wrongs of the past is very important. And in addition, you know, our campaign is proudly supported by many unions, and I'll be working with them to build up the next generation.
That's time, and the next question is from Lucas Willard from WAMC.
What is your vision for traffic calming and increasing pedestrian safety in the Capital Region?
This time we start with Ginny Farrell.
Traffic calming, and it's one of the major issues that we deal with across the district. Directly in the city of Albany, we've post-pandemic, we've been dealing with a lot of increased speeds, things like that. And to change that, it's really a combination of planning and accountability, and obviously investment. So to make sure that we're really bringing in all of the different multi-use processes, that we're looking at pedestrians, that we're looking at public transportation, we're looking at bike infrastructure as we're building our roads and bridges, and also making sure that we have the funding to do this and build out our public transportation sector. We need to bring this into the planning, we need to bring it into the future, and we need to move forward with it and make sure the funding is there.
Thank you. We continue with Owusu Anane.
Yeah, thank you for that question. As relates to traffic calming, it is particularly post-COVID. What we're seeing in our state is that there are individuals who are just flat out ignoring the laws that we have, particularly when it comes to transportation, speed controls and other devices. Just 2 days ago, there was a fatal incident that took place on Washington Avenue. And this is a street that had four lanes. And I believe that government has to make that an investment to make sure that we're have traffic calming initiatives in place, whether it's creating bike lanes, whether it's expanding a technology to technology devices so people calm down, but also work with our law enforcement officers to actually protect our community. Everyone have a right to safe streets, no matter where you live, and we have to make sure that pedestrians feel safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We continue with Gabriella Romero.
Traffic calming is something that's really, really important to me, and is walkability and pedestrian safety is something that I've cared deeply about and introduced bills in the city council to address. Most importantly, and at top of mind, is the fact that our roads are way too wide. Wide roads contribute to people thinking that they're able to speed. So in order to make our roads more narrow, that's a massive investment. It takes a lot of government dollars to do that, but there's creative ways to do it. Whether it's just putting in trees in the middle of the street, whether it's adding bike lanes, like some of my colleagues have mentioned, there's many, many, many different ways that we can invest in traffic calming, but it takes a lot of government funds to do so. I'm very, very proud to be working with walkability advocates existing already on the city council. I'm excited to continue that partnership if and when elected to the New York State Assembly, and I'm excited to also continue my partnerships with federal and state legislators to make sure that those investments and to make sure that those programs are invested in the 109th district.
Let's continue on now with Dustin Reedy.
Well, when it comes to this issue, you know, the simple fact is we need to slow traffic down, and to make streets safer, you have to make driving harder. When you have wide lane roads that are straight, and it's too easy for drivers to look at their phones and not pay attention to how fast they're going, it increases pedestrian risk. And it's a huge issue in this district. It's a huge issue where I live in Guilderland. And in the town of Guilderland, you know, we've started to pilot speed humps on the roads. I know we have that in the city of Albany as well. We'll be looking at the town boards looking at reducing our town speed limits to 25 miles an hour. I'm in favor of that. I'll work in the assembly to slow our cars down, make our roads more bikeable, increase our bike lanes. And there's creative ways, and there's actually inexpensive ways that you can put our roads on diet, so to speak, narrow those lanes so that it's too hard to drive distracted.
Thank you. And Alicia Purdy goes next on Safer Streets.
You guys probably remember the story of Alexa Croft, who was hit by that illegal biker, and she has severe brain damage now. And road diets, those are all things we can have conversations about. I would never presume that that's what you need. And I think it's important that you're looped into that conversation. But when you look at human beings that have been devastated, it's because of a lack of law and order and consequences for our actions. That's what is, we have the laws in place. We lack enforcement for these illegal bikers, for people who are blazing down the street at top speeds. We've had to bring in the Albany County Sheriff's Department to help us out in the city of Albany. Sure, we could have sidewalks in Gilderland, but if somebody's going to break the law, what's going to happen to them? If someone's going to run down a college student, what's going to happen to them? We have to begin with what we have. All of these things are expensive. That's what they're talking about. Your taxes are going to go up. Where are the things in place that we can do right now to help ourselves? And it starts with enforcement of the laws we currently have when people are blazing down the street, and then consequences for the breaking of those laws.
Thank you. Andrew Joyce next. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm a father of two young kids. I'm a dog owner. I'm a runner. I think we need to begin at the granular level when we talk about safer streets and traffic calming in the city, Gilderland, a town in New Scotland. Beginning with our sidewalks, seeing what we see when we're out with our families walking. I often text Jack Flynn if I see a crack in the sidewalk or something, or an overgrowth. So we need to start there. And that's traffic calming. And when I'm elected to the assembly, I'm going to make sure that DOT, any plan that they have for a new roadway or any infrastructure project, has a traffic calming aspect to it. That's just the way we're going as a society. More people are out post-COVID. People are on their bikes, they're out walking, they're reconnecting with nature, and we need to ensure any new infrastructure project has a traffic calming aspect to it. And again, not talking about what I'm going to do, what did I already do? As chair of the Albany County Legislature, we had appointments to the Albany County Traffic Safety Board. I brought in Walkable Albany, and I brought in the Albany Bicycle Coalition to bring in experts to add that voice to that important issue.
Thank you, that's time. And we will go to Jack Flynn to end this round.
Thank you. Roundabouts, we need roundabouts. I think they work. They cut down fatalities, big thing. Speed humps, the city of Albany's putting them in now, and now we got a pilot for some more. Crosswalks, I think we need to make our crosswalks a little bit lighter so people can see them. They got to be up to date every year. I don't know about you guys. City of Albany really needs to update our crosswalks. Flashlights at crosswalks, I think they help a lot. 25-mile speed limit, city of Albany is currently proposing that. Hopefully we can get that on the books to get it down to 25-30. I know we all talk about enforcement, I understand, but I really think it's a mindset. If you can get people down to 25-30, it really will save accidents, it'll save fatalities. Andrew and I have Ed Brennan in our district, who's a big advocate, and he's head of the New York State Bike Coalition and Pedestrians, so we got a good guy on our side for anything. Red light cameras, we got them in Albany. Maybe we'll have to put them in New Scotland and Gilland, because there are statistics that says it's working. Speed cameras. City of Albany, we're going to try to put some speed cameras around schools right now, but we're in the process of that. Thank you.
Time flies when you're having fun. We are really short on time left in today's forum, and there's just enough for each candidate to offer a one-minute closing statement today, beginning with Gabriella Romero.
Well, thank you so much for having us, and thank you, everyone in the audience. Thank you to those listening, and thanks for staying for the whole hour. I'm really excited to continue this conversation. I'm excited to learn more, but I'm most excited to advocate for you. As a public defender, I know what it's like to go up against the system, to advocate strongly, and to win. So I'm excited to bring that same intensity to the New York State Assembly. Please follow along on my website, send me an email. My phone number is on all my literature, so I'm excited to talk to you more, and let's continue this conversation.
Thank you. Next to Dustin Reedy.
Well, thank you again for holding this forum. And I want to thank everyone who's here in the Linda, everyone listening. It's a great conversation. And I think my colleagues up here, I think we share a lot of the same visions and goals. I know there's some policy differences or prioritization we might differ on. But protecting our environment here in the district, ensuring we have clean drinking water and air, protecting our parks, reducing our carbon footprint, that's the goal that we have here in the 109th District for New York State. I'm running for the Assembly to be a strong Democratic voice for the towns of New Scotland and Gilderland, the city of Albany, everyone here in the district. As a county legislator, working for Congressman Tonko, I've been engaged with, working within this district, and delivering for it in the county legislature. I'll do that in the New York State Assembly, and I hope to earn your vote on primary day. But thank you again for listening.
Let's continue closing statements with Alicia Purdy.
Okay, I'm running as the only person not currently holding office, so I have no political promises to keep. My promises to people. The platforms that I'm running on are peace and prosperity and potential. It was Ronald Reagan who said that peace is the greatest aspiration of the American people. Theodore Roosevelt who said you cannot create prosperity by law, but you can ruin it with law. And it was Winston Churchill who said continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is a key to unlocking our potential. That is why I'm running. The reason why you want to vote for Alicia Purdy is because she votes for you at the legislative level.
Let's continue with Andrew Joyce.
Again, I want to thank my friends of the Conservation League and WAMC for having us here today for this important discussion. I thank everybody up here. Will be a good steward of the environment going forward in their own right. We don't really have a choice. We are in the midst of a climate crisis. It's a tough challenge. There are a lot of tough issues at stake, but I have hope, you know, going forward that we're going to continue to innovate and come up with good solutions to protect our environment, protect our natural world. And you know, we have big shoes to fill. Assemblymember Pat Fay has 100% rating for the New York Conservation League. She has set a tremendous glide path for us to follow in. And I look forward to doing so in New York State Assembly. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Jack Flynn next.
I'd like to thank everybody. First of all, I'd like to thank the conservation for giving me a test, this exam. It was great. I learned so much out of these 16 pages. I felt like I haven't been in college in 20 years, but I really did learn a lot. I want to thank my colleagues for all the good answers that they gave. And it was very informative for not only myself, but for the audience. I hope we can get my support on June 25th or early voting. So thank you all.
Ginny Farrell next, please.
Thank you so much. Thank you to everyone listening and everyone here at the Linda, along with the League of Conservation Voters, WAMC, and our moderators, Julie Tighe, Lucas Willer, and Ian Pickus. This race matters, and this assembly seat matters, and it needs someone with the experience to truly take the reins from Pat Fahey and work with her. I am that candidate. Having worked with Pat for the people of Albany, Guilderland, and New Scotland, I know the district, I know the assembly, I know legislation, particularly environmental legislation. I've worked directly on the Birds and Bees Protection Act, packaging reduction, and the bottle bill update, and I have relationships to hit the ground running and continue to make things happen from day one. I got into public service because I care. I care about our schools, I care about our environment, and I care about you. And it would be an honor to represent you as the assembly member from the 109th Assembly District. I hope you'll check out my website, and I hope you'll vote for me in June.
Let's wrap up today with Owusu Anane.
Thank you. Again, my name is Owusu Anane. I'm son of immigrants from West Africa. I'm running because I believe that we need to create a state that believes in everyone. And what does that mean is that fighting for affordable housing for working families, addressing public safety, making sure that our schools are being fully funded. These are the issues that I care about, economic opportunity and educational opportunity. I will fight every day to make sure that our state is taking care of everyone in the 109th Assembly District. What this election is about is so important that we have to make sure that we have someone who go against mega Republicans, make sure they don't have no chance representing the 109th Assembly District. I am that candidate. I'm young, black, and educated, and I'm ready to work for the 109th Assembly District.
You've been listening to live coverage of the WAMC New York League of Conservation Voters Candidate Forum in the race for the State Assembly's 109th District seat. Thank you to our candidates and our panelists today. Let's give them a round of applause. Thank you also to the staff here at the Linda and our engineers back at home base. Primary day, as you heard a few times, is June 25th. The general election is November 5th. And if you missed any part of today's forum or would like to hear it again, you can visit WAMC.org. For everyone here at the Linda in Albany, I'm Ian Pickus. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.